And hello, and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and here we are, all nice and handsome and thin and perfect, although you can't see us.
Tough, too, and smart.
And tough and smart and
although we haven't taken
strong.
Over our country at 27.
Not yet.
And we don't put people in gulags.
It's a bit late for the
27
takeover. More like 57, but anyway, in my case.
Fair enough.
There's still time.
TMI, but fair enough. Open Sources is Guelph... I've already screwed up. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Now, today we will be talking about the future of Ontario and what life might look like under a Doug Ford government, which is still not entirely clear even a week later. So what can we expect from Premier-designate Ford and his new majority government? Then, President Trump has been busy since we've been covering the election, and he started a trade war with Canada while we weren't looking, and we'll talk about how and why Justin Trudeau has become Trump's villain of the week. And then finally, we'll talk about how Donald Trump met Kim Jong-un and seemed to get absolutely nothing in exchange for creating or for ceasing war games with South Korea. And we'll talk about how Trump has flattered Kim repeatedly, well, and we can't stress this enough, being in a war of words with Canada. But first, let's recap election night, because a lot happened, even as we were trying to report it all live to air last Thursday. So let's start with the final tally, because there were some seats that were still up in the air when we signed off at 11:30. The PCs have 76 seats. They garnered 2,322,422 votes, or 40.49%. The NDP got 40 seats and 1,925,574 votes for 33.57%. And the Liberals got 7 seats for 1,123,283 votes, or 19.59%. And of course, there was that one green seat, but the province-wide vote total was 263,987, or 4.6%. And that lined up pretty close to the forum poll, which was taken on June 6th. The PCs had 39% support, NDP had 34% support, and the Liberals had 21% support, and the Greens had 5% support. So sometimes the polls work.
Wow, an accurate poll. Unbelievable.
Delivered.
I think the consensus was poll schmoles, but there's some of the predictions obviously correct. Mine was the wild card one. We won't even talk about it because I usually am wrong, but I'm not really a betting man either. But yeah, so of course we did. We made history. And I guess the show sort of made history too, because we were the first ones of the 10,000 outlets that Mike Schreiner talked to after he won.
Oh, yeah.
He was everywhere for about 72 hours.
What was hilarious is that CTV Kitchener did like they followed him around on the Friday after, and it's like they just discovered there was a party leader running in their broadcast area. Wow, CTV, they're on top of local news. Yawn.
But of course, you heard it here first. We were all over it. And you know, Mike, we
he was
definitely
on the first,
Mike, front of the show.
The
in
second
fact,
person that we interviewed for candidate wise for that. I mean, he's been on the show several times, but he was the second person to come in for the candidate profile. So.
And I'm fairly sure that is what Mike did correctly. Somebody said, "Well, what made you think that?" Not just coming on the show. I'm not too. But somebody had asked me for a little bit of analysis. Said, "Well, why do you think the green?
I'm sure he doesn't mind that.
The green did so well." Yeah, yeah. And I was like, "Yes, he is the green." And I very jokingly had made my Snapped Guelph analysis. Shout out to Snapped Guelph. But it's true. Mike was at every event. And I spoke to people that, may not be as politically engaged as us or certain people. Mm-hmm. And it would be like, well, he was at such and such. He was at this barbecue and I met him at this. Events that you would say there really is no link to them all, except for the fact that they took place in town.
Yeah.
And I think that was the key, in my opinion, to his success, was that he absolutely covered all of the bases.
Well, you could argue that's
the key. And had a
great
team, too.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that's the key to incumbency, too, is like being seen. And the secret to incumbency is that sometimes you go to these things because it's part of your job, which is why I think that probably attributed to why Liz Sandals was always winning. and winning handily is because she was always at making announcements, always being seen at things. Although, you know, people have their anecdotal stories about her not exactly being approachable. But she was seen and was kind of out front doing a lot of stuff in Guelph. And you can make the same argument for Lloyd Longfield or Frank Valeriot, too. It's just like when you're a career politician, you kind of have that time to be seen at everything, sometimes because it's part of your job and sometimes because you're campaigning for 4 years. So, I mean, that's not to disrespect Mike at all, but it's
no, but yeah, I mean,
he was basically campaigning for 4 years.
Campaigning.
Yeah.
and that is essentially what you have to do, especially when you're
so he in essence looked like the incumbent here because he ran last time and Liz wasn't running this time. So he looked like the incumbent
for sure. And of course, Ray Ferraro, a distant second. In fact, I think the vote gap was as much as his total vote. It was something like that, right? Like double Ray Ferraro's vote, and that was Mike's vote. Was it something like that, roughly?
Yeah, Ray Ferraro had 21.8%, 14,084. So, yeah, I mean, it's Mike did twice as better.
Not even close.
So it wasn't, yeah.
I'm just shocked he came in second, but I guess I think that was more so votes for Ford and not for Ray Ferraro.
No, because no disrespect to Ray. What would he have done in a Ford government? What would he have brought? Because he tucked
much.
A lot of
real estate connections.
Who cares?
I mean, that's what he would have brought. Because that was all he talked about. I know a guy, and he'll build these low cost housing.
Yeah, but he would also talk about I was on Guelph City Council. Yeah, you were on City Council for 3 years before you and eight other people were thrown off in 2006, and it was like the biggest mass shoving a city council out of the door in probably this city's
first,
history.
Yeah,
it was like a freaking colonoscopy. No offense to colonoscopies, but no, it's. You know, so he would he'd also say things like, we didn't have a chance to have him in the studio, so I didn't get a chance to ask him.
Oh, like, we had a chance. It just didn't happen. But anyway.
Right, but, you know, he would say things like, oh, we're going to buy back Hydro One. He said that in at least two debates, that the PCs are going to buy back Hydro One, and there's, like, absolutely nothing to back that up. It seemed to be
Had very little concrete policy the whole time. Anyway, so he pretty much could say whatever he wanted, right?
We'll get into that. The thing I found interesting is, Robert Benzie of the Star did like a detailed analysis.
Of
the whole province.
Of the whole province. Yeah.
at least he put down his answer on Twitter. He didn't exactly show his work, but he said there were 14 PC seats that the NDP could have won if Liberals had strategically voted NDP, and there were six PC seats, so 20 in all, six PC seats that the Liberals could have won if the NDP had strategically voted for the Liberals. So if everything had went according to that plan, we'd have PC 56, NDP 54, Liberals 13, and then the Green 1. So it would be possible for there to have been some kind of coalition.
Yeah, and that was my wild card prediction.
Mm-hmm.
But it was to be with Mike Schreiner as Kingmaker. So at least that part of it came true that well, he wasn't Kingmaker, but he got a seat, like, resounding.
But it was fascinating how close a lot of these races were. There's the Ottawa West Nepean race, where the PC candidate lost by 176 votes to the NDP. Kathleen Wynne herself won her riding by 181 votes.
Surprising, actually. Good for her, but yeah, surprising that she won, because usually it's when...
We should add that John Fraser, MPP for Ottawa South, is now the interim leader of the...
Oh, when did that happen today?
Yesterday.
Yesterday,
like yesterday, I think.
How did I miss that?
A lot happens.
We'll get
into that in the back of the show. But yeah, it's in Brampton. There were a lot of close races in Brampton. Sarah Singh won by 89 votes over the conservative Harjit Jaswal. The PC won in Brampton South by about 2,700 votes, and the PC won in Brampton West by 490 votes. So, and then there were two races where 81 votes determined the winner. It was in
Scarborough
and Thunder Bay. Liberal Mitzi Hunter and NDP Judith Monteca Farrell were the recipients there. So
lots of squeakers then.
Lots of squeakers. Yeah, I mean,
it does lend itself to every vote counts, right? when you hear margins like that, it's eight in the scheme of things. 80 votes is, well, it's not nothing.
It's
more than three.
It's less than two buses full of people.
Yeah,
if you put it that way.
Let's put it in bus term. Yeah. So if a certain party was running a bus, then they could tip the scales. But
mm-hmm. And then the breakdown seemed to be is like where the votes are were interesting. It seemed to play out pretty much how we figured, with the PCs winning suburban GTA and rural areas, NDP winning the cities, downtown Toronto, London, Hamilton, Windsor, and then the Liberals managing to hold on to a few seats in scattered areas like their base in Toronto, Ottawa.
I was going to say, though, even though the what was I going to say? Completely lost my train of thought there.
We're a professional show.
Just before airtime, conservative vote went up 800,000 votes from the last time, which mm-hmm. is massive. I mean, mm-hmm. that was the main switch, I think, that went on. And as far as leaders go, as you said, Kathleen Wynne won her seat. And if I understand it right, Andrea Horvath's margin was the largest of anybody at 60%. So she had the most resounding win of everybody in the province. Yeah. And I think she may be sort of the, beyond Ford, the other winner. The fact that the NDP's vote was second highest. I mean, the highest was obviously in the Ray election of 1990.
Well, even
40 seats.
Right. Even for NDPs who didn't win, like Aggie here in Guelph, she got almost 14,000 votes. She was a very close second. She had 21.57% of the vote against Ferraro, who had 21.8%.
It's statistically a tie, so, really.
Yeah, I mean, so if it was a poll, it would be within the margin of error. But I think she had the biggest NDP... I'd have to look at my original Politico article on it, but she had the biggest... she had the biggest amount of votes for any NDP candidate in the Guelph riding since Fletcher in 90. And of course that was the one where the Bob Rae NDP were ushered into power.
Yeah, and of course less people than back in can't remember the population count, but and if I understand it right, the vote, that's what I was going to say earlier,
it was Guelph Wellington at the time too, I think, the riding.
Overall, this is the highest turnout we've seen in years. I think, what was it, 58%?
Yep.
And which is up 10%.
In Guelph, it was 63, I think.
And that's up 10% from 2011 overall. So in 2011, it was 10% less. So 48% decided this time, much higher. So people got out there. Not everybody, but
it's still disappointing in the grand.
Yeah,
scheme
it's low.
Of things.
It is low. If you go back far enough, it was post-war. You've got everybody was getting an A in terms of how many people voted, and then it's progressively gone downhill. But that's quite a significant bounce back, 10% more, and lots of the advance polls too. Was it advance was something like 700,000 somewhere in the vicinity?
Mm-hmm.
That's massive.
Mm-hmm. So, people were enthusiastic, and maybe this is where we can make the pivot to what's going to happen next, because Doug Ford did a press conference on Friday, and I'd swear he looked like a deer in the headlights during it.
He generally does have that look, but yeah.
It's, like, he was very
calm.
He's like,
oh, God, do I really have to answer the questions
now?
Yeah,
he was very – it wasn't like I don't think he was surprised, because I think he's very self-assured generally, but I think there was a realization of what the next phase of the undertaking is, because he wasn't as bombastic as usual, and he was like very calm and answered the questions from the hated press, and he hates the press. There's no doubt about that.
And I think when he does that, this is just my opinion, that's when he's been coached. You're not just sort of freewheeling. It's when it's measured. You see it with Trump as well.
Maybe.
And did you see that video that's making the rounds of Cynthia Mulligan talking to Ford when he was, I guess it was around the Trump was on the rise, and he said, my support is unwavering for Donald Trump. But yet this week, interestingly, I wouldn't say it's a complete turn, and we're going to get to it in a minute too, he said that he stands with Trudeau we'll get to that later.
We'll get to that. But
he went from like, I have unwavering support for Donald Trump to I support Justin Trudeau, which was a bit of a twist.
That's part of the culture shock he's going to have to go through. To him, politics was like calling a press conference for no reason. Like, oh, I decided I'm not going to run for PC leader circa 2015. Mm. You know, when he announced his stupid book, Four Nation, Two Brothers, One Plan,
Toronto
Rocks. I made
it through about three pages before it's like, I can't read this. And it wasn't,
oh, I made it a bit further than that.
Did you? Did you find it was just kind of poorly written?
That's a big 10-4.
Yeah.
it goes on tangents, and then the next paragraph begins, literally, well, anyway.
Yeah, I know it was supposed to be kind of matter-of-fact and folksy, but it just didn't work.
Doesn't work in a book.
Put it this way, I'm so glad I didn't pay money for it.
Yeah, that doesn't work in a book.
You get it from the GPL
if it works in a stump speech, maybe yeah. Not so much in a book.
Well, at least it didn't say, anywho.
But, I mean, I think part of the difficulty is there's kind of like no real platform. There's no real plan. He said a lot of stuff like buck a beer, fire the $6 million man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who I'm still not convinced anybody knows his name. It's
Mayo Schmidt. Sounds like something out of the movies.
Yeah, it does sound like an alias.
Oh, my God, it's Mayo Schmidt.
Yeah.
The $6 million man.
Yeah.
I should have dug up the music.
It's like
I love
a 60s gangster. Like, he loves corned beef or something. Anyway.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's
he loves corned beef.
With mayo.
My name is Schmidt, and I love mayo, yeah.
Yeah. Order up for Mayo Schmidt. What'd you call me? Anyway. The thing is, like, where does he begin? Because a lot of people were talking initially about the whole cutting tax or cutting gas prices, which is fine. But then you're automatically clearing $1 billion plus out of the coffers by lowering gas prices. You know, you're also coming out of election where a lot of people are talking about more transit. Well, what helps fund transit? Gas taxes.
Yes, indeed.
So, you know, he's painted himself into a corner there right away. And cap and trade, too. He wants to get rid of that, but he also doesn't want to instill carbon pricing, which he has to, because of the federal government mandate. And I mean, there's been a lot of talk on both sides that, you know, Jason Kenney's like, okay, we're going to have a great ally in Doug Ford, so we don't do this hippy-dippy carbon pricing. I don't know why I'm giving Jason Kenney some kind of trucker impression, but the other thing is,
yeah, he speaks gently, but he's really thinking like that. Damn hippies.
But the other
go
thing
back
is
to Ontario. Oh, wait, and Ontario's
somebody
a friend
from
now.
The NDP said, like, oh, maybe he'll rethink the whole if it's going to put a big hole in the province's revenue to get rid of cap and trade. Maybe he's going to rethink it. It's like, really? That's super optimistic coming from the guy who supported his brother canceling a fully funded, fully costed LRT plan in order to raise taxes to build a four-stop subway for three times the price.
Subways.
Right.
Statement. Yeah, and one of Mike Schreiner's talking points was that he said quite a few times that Doug Ford had said that he thought climate change was man-made in some talk.
It was like it was
that debate. They were going to sit down and have a little chat about it. That remains to be seen, I suppose.
Love to be a fly on that one.
Of course, some of the other things he put out, too, is pleasing the Christian right. There's all that stuff,
goodness.
Too, sex ed.
Campaign for Life sent out a press release election night.
Yeah.
About how they're so excited that sex ed's going to be gone. No six-year-old will ever have to learn the word penis again. Or vagina.
No, they just have to listen to the show to hear it. Nope. I guess those are...
Hey, kids. Penis.
Yikes.
Well, goodbye broadcasting license.
The big hook just came around the corner there and pulled Adam out of the studio.
But, I mean, that's...
But that's pretty accurate, though, because that's...
It's fairly... Yeah.
They've got this... Such a hate on for... They always tie Kathleen Wynne to it. I hated Kathleen Wynne to suck program, and pervert came up with it. You just hear the same talking points, all the usual rubbish. And it sounds like that the protesting in front of the abortion clinics is going to change as well in the name of free speech.
Yeah. That's that. Another thing I'm waiting to hear about. Like, how is university funding going to be tied to free speech?
And speaking of which, too, I guess it was yesterday, I just heard a two-sentence thing from Ford, and I was like, did he actually say that? And I had to look it up. Yes, he did. Open bids on everything.
Yeah.
Open bids, we're going to go line by line. And for those who don't know, folks, open bids means privatization pretty much. Even though no one is going to lose their job. But
Well, he says.
But I mean,
he also says he saved the city of Toronto. Him and Rob Ford saved $1.16 billion, which is a lot.
Which is the absolute nonsense number that keeps coming up.
It's a lie.
Who did the breakdown? Was it Justin Lane?
It was Justin Lane.
And it turned out that when at the end of the Ford era, the budget was actually up something like $400 million.
Yeah.
where's the money? But he kept saying it.
Yeah.
So he was actually...
So, I mean,
lying.
You know, there's a lot of stuff, you know, south of the border. It's like, when, you know, when do you call what Trump says a lie? And how do you call it a lie? Like, how do you separate, you know, intent from, you know, the fact that he's just, like, lives in his own little dream world? Well, I mean, it's pretty easy in the case of Doug Ford. People have been telling him for 4 years the 1.16 billion number is a lie.
Mm.
And he keeps saying it. So it's a lie. And he's lying about it.
So you're calling the new premier a liar. Well, you're not the only one. Lots of people are. Not just saying that. It's, you know, but we're fake news, right? That's nice.
You know, it's
he follows us on Twitter. We should tweet him and say, hey, yeah, Doug, come on.
He
come
does follow. He's still following me the other too. Day. He's still following
oh
me
my
on Twitter.
God, follow my Doug Ford. Or
I
his
don't know
bot
why.
Or whatever. Yeah, that's...
It's crazy.
Keeping an eye on us, man.
Yeah,
so,
maybe.
Yeah, well,
Big brother.
We'll have to get him on then. If,
Big
if
brother
gonna,
Doug.
If you're going to follow us, then we're going to offer it up and say, look, come on our show.
Oh, yeah, we can DM him.
Yeah, I think we should. We'll toss a coin after.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that would be awesome yet really weird at the same time.
So. I wonder if he'd wear a tie because he doesn't like to
wear
a tie.
Well, you want to physically get him in here and just be on the phone.
Maybe. Well, maybe we'll see. I do want to talk about Doug Ford because I think there has to be a reckoning here because in the moment of victory, I think the PCs have largely forgotten about all the stuff that went on, which is all the stuff Brown did. And I don't mean the allegations of assaulting young women. I mean...
No, the writings.
The writing association crap.
Yeah.
Doug's... the fact that Doug parachuted in the Earth Day 11... Some of whom won.
Yeah.
All the scandals, the 407 data thing, the other stuff that went on, like the Andrew Lawton, Tanya Greg Allen, all the, like, the unserious people who were running, who fortunately didn't win. There's also all the stuff with all like the racist stuff, all the Ontario Pride stuff. And on top of that, all like this unholy alliance between those people and old-fashioned Harperites like Corey Tenecki, who ran the Ford campaign, which I hate it. Like that guy who showed up at the Andrea Horvath, go sanctuary province. I hate that stuff.
Oh, here, you mean at the Bonus?
I'm sure somebody was following her around doing that, though. It was a different guy, no matter where she showed up, and I'm sure it was happening. But that's like textbook Corey Tenecki stuff. Like, that stuff...
Well, you mean the journalist from the internet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, him.
Yeah. Can I have your card? It says, from the internet, right on
that,
it.
That guy's card was the Ace of Clubs. Anyway, it was a 1987 Jose Canseco baseball guard. No. Was he playing
that
in 1987?
I don't know.
I guess my point is, like, I don't want to get into a situation where, like, I'm watching in the United States where I'm seeing, like, the White House press corps, like, oh, it's a lie. Blah, blah, blah. Like, we got to be treated everybody fair and equal. It's like, no. Because I yell at my TV when they put, like, Trump bumpkins on CNN on a panel.
Yeah.
And it's like, I do not want to get into that stuff. I want to cross my fingers and hope for the best that Doug Ford isn't going to be half the jackass as premier that he's been in private life.
Yeah.
But I'm highly skeptical he can do that. And we talked about this on election night. I'm highly skeptical that he's going to get 6 months in and get bored and start having executive time or whatever the Ontario premier equivalent of that is going to be.
Something Mar-a-Lago-ish somewhere. Probably
well, that's
Muskoka,
the thing, too. Somebody posted.
Or
like
Florida.
Right. Somebody posted
where Mar-a-Lago is
last
anyway,
week. So. When
that'll be next.
The lieutenant governor announced that he's inviting the PCs to form government on basically the weekend before Canada Day. Someone posted like, oh, well, no can do. Doug Ford's not going to bail on a cottage weekend. And I was like, yeah.
Wasn't there something that went on when they went to the cottage instead of going to Pride?
Yeah, they did that every year. That was the excuse why you couldn't go to the Pride. It's like it's family time at the cottage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't interrupt my family time.
Yeah,
the province is falling apart.
So I mean, that's the concern, at least for me, is you know, can the PCs reconcile this, or are we going to be watching like a slow motion car crash in a couple of months when all the excitement about beating Kathleen Wynne, beating the horrid Kathleen Wynne finally, and taking the Liberals down several pegs. Like, when that excitement wears off, what happens to the PC party then? Because it's not just going to be infighting.
Yeah.
They're going to be the government.
Well, there'll be a couple of things. The action is starting soon. They're going to get back, supposedly, form a cabinet that will be much smaller than Kathleen Wynne's.
Well, I mean, that's
something's going to be half the size.
That's a trend. Cabinets get bigger over time.
Bigger, and then it's going to be downsized completely in the name of efficiencies. One of the first orders of business will be ending the York strike.
Right.
But I think, as you know, projecting into the future, this is my guess, is that you'll be seeing more and more of Deputy Premier, I don't know, Christine Elliott doing the rounds, or Carolyn Mulroney, all the people. There was that, you know, quasi cabinet meeting that he had.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that was to calm certain people's nerves, is like, no, it's okay. These people have
my
back. He's
going to be surrounded by serious people.
Yeah.
Not
which
the
is good
Lawtons.
Because this, you know, it's the kind of thing that people, I think, secretly hoped for Trump. And then it turns out that it doesn't matter who it is. There's very few people that Trump will listen to. Now, I can't say one way or the other. Donald Ford. D. Ford is the same. I don't think so. But of course, our system is different too. And this
right.
is the thing, is that people forget our parliamentary setup is that, you know, he's in charge, but he's not as in charge as Trump is. He's not the president of
right.
Ontario.
I think that's important.
Doesn't work
thing.
That way.
I think, yeah, that's an important thing to remember, is that he has to make his cabinet of the people available. And there are a lot of serious people who are part of his cabinet, many of whom are going to be green. But I think if you start hearing about, like,
not Green Party, but green.
Green as in new. Yeah.
I don't know if we can use that anymore.
Evergreen, let's say.
Greenish.
But,
fresh faces.
You know, if we start hearing about, you know, Minister of Agriculture Sam Ustaroff, I think we're going to have a problem.
That is painful to me. That personally stabs at me somehow. The kid is back.
I do want to add some good news that the PC caucus has 24 women in it, which is an increase of 10%.
Wow.
And that there are 11 members of the PC caucus who are from visible minorities, which is an increase of 10. There used to be one, Raymond Cho.
So
there's more representation.
Yeah,
at least
you found the bright side positivity of everything.
That's what I do.
And I guess, yeah. After all that, this poor guy, I don't know him.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's important to look on the bright side. I mean, I have deep concerns about Doug Ford, but I think that the people who won are all serious people who want to do some good. And we'll see. I mean, I think we all agree that we needed to have a refresh at the provincial level. That, you know, no matter what you feel about Kathleen Wynne and the Liberals, they were in power for 15 years.
But hopefully it isn't just
and that's not necessarily good either.
Corporate people and the fundamentalists pulling the strings. You have to hope that there's going to be a bit more like actual.
And there's already demonstrations planned. I'm following one on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, on the 30th or something?
I think it's the 30th. Yeah, it's a Saturday.
Yep.
Anyway.
I got tapped to go. We'll see. I'll go cover it. I did air quotes there too.
Yeah.
But somebody that has to watch out. Somebody that has to watch out.
Finger quotes are great on the radio. And music is great on the radio, too. And we're going to play some music.
Sorry, that was supposed to be the theme from the $6 Million Man. I apologize. Fail. Yes, we're going to play some music.
Good Lord.
I'm
supposed
it.
To be semi-professional.
It was my favorite show.
That wasn't even remotely professional. We're going to play some music and take a break. And then we're going to come back with the Trump stuff. You're listening to Open Source as Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Ain't no coffee shops around. I heard them Google men drink so much coffee, I declare, I think they might drown.
Gentrification is here.
Oh, one thing I know, you can't stand pat. I declare you got to step it up and go.
And that was the legendary Ry Cooder from his new album. Yes, he's still putting out albums after all these years. It's called Prodigal Son. And that song was called Gentrification. We'll have to play that again when the municipal things start to heat up.
Yeah.
Because it's not often that somebody puts out a CD or a release with a song called Gentrification. Unless they're punks, maybe. I don't know, but Ry Cooder's no punk.
Talking about how they got kicked out of the rehearsal space
because
Starbucks moved in.
Yeah, pretty much. Or Johnny Depp bought the building, according to Ry Cooder.
Damn.
I mean, I want to know more about that story because I bet it's real.
Considering
maybe he owns 40 Baker.
Considering what we've learned about how Johnny Depp spends his money, yeah.
It's quite possible. It's, yeah, yeah.
I would say that would be
he owns the UC. I don't
that would that'd be hilarious. But I think buying
make a good film,
buying somebody's make... rehearsal space is probably the most wise thing Johnny Depp spent his money on in a good long time. We're not here to talk about Johnny Depp, though. We're here to talk about Donald J. Trump. Who we've had to ignore the last couple of weeks, at least professionally on the show. But he has been busy, like canceling meetings, establishing meetings, talking about not wanting to go to meetings. And that's what happened last week. He went to the G7. He put the steel and aluminum tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and EU were initially exempt, but then he changed his mind on that. Now we're facing similar tariffs, and Canada is going to be retaliating starting July 1st.
The magic
and Justin
day.
Trudeau's being very unfair. Very unfair to Donald Trump, at least according to Donald Trump.
He's weak and dishonest.
Right, and meek.
He's weak. He didn't see the boxing match, obviously, right?
He hasn't seen that video because no. Donald Trump would never come back to freaking Canada if he saw it.
No problem.
Come
back with hired goons.
But I just want to point out that, as you alluded to earlier, Donald Trump has managed to unite Andrew Scheer, Jason Kenney, and Doug Ford behind Justin Trudeau to protect Canadian interests.
Miracles
so congratulations, Doug Ford. You did the impossible. You made three people who all think Justin Trudeau is the devil and made him the freaking anti-hero of Canada. He's freaking ghostwriter now. Congratulations, Donald Trump. You are a uniter in Canada anyway.
Yeah, there was that motion passed by and put forward by the NDP about the House standing united and rejecting disparaging ad hominem statements. And I overheard a bit, I don't know what the station was, and I heard somebody speaking, and they're like, we stand for Canadian workers. And I'm thinking, what lefty is this? It was Candace Bergen. I was like, what? What is going on here? So obviously when the stakes are high, there is this weird unity that I don't think we've seen in years over NAFTA and everything that's at stake.
Yeah,
economically with the discussions, but yeah, Candace Bergen, I'm like, whoa, that's what.
And then
she had some orange crush, I think, before she went in or something.
Oh dear,
that's what it sounded like. I was like, what NDP person is this? It's not weird.
And Chrystia Freeland's in Washington right now. She was given an award by Foreign Policy Magazine last night, and in it she made this really spectacular speech where she said, amongst other things, "Demagogues who scapegoat the outsider and the other," and it's like, who could she be referring to there? That sounds vaguely Trumpian.
And every three words she said were getting applauded. The bit I saw was like, she'd say something, everybody's like, this clapping going on. I was like,
yeah.
They love her.
It was almost like she was saying, you get free cake, you get free cake, you get free cake. It was almost like that.
Free cake. And then people trotting out Republican and Democrats saying, pretty much saying that the Trump's comments were unfair towards our best friend and largest trading partner. And, you know, it was the insult wasn't called for. And that's from all sides in the state. Now, I guess not absolutely everybody, because, of course, there was the famous, you know, Trudeau deserving a place in hell comment, which I think has been redacted
that was,
or retracted.
Yes, he apologized for that. Peter Navarro, I have the CNN article. In here.
What was he on Meet the Press? Or?
It was on one of the Sunday shows. I think it was on This Week. But he said, in conveying that message, I used language that was inappropriate and basically lost the power of that message. I don't know. I thought the message was Justin Trudeau can go to hell because he's treating the United States so unfairly. So I'm not sure if he's confused about the message or the words. I don't know. He says, I own that. That was my mistake. Those were my words. Which I guess is nice because it was on Fox News Sunday, by the way.
It's riveting. Nice. Sure.
Well, I mean, that's hosted by Chris Wallace, who's journalist-like. He apologized for what he said, which is an unusual thing for Trump people. But at the same time, Donald Trump sets the tone, and he's on Air Force One tweeting away about
it's going to cost Canadians a lot of money.
It's going to cost him a lot of money. And Justin Trudeau didn't come out to the press conference and say, I told Trump where to go. It was very, like, very press.
Statesman-like.
Yeah, it was clearly massaged by the press. Operation.
Like, oh, yeah, I was on an airplane. He didn't think I would be watching, but I was watching.
That was one of the stupidest things I've ever
TV
heard
on
Trump
your airplane?
Say.
Wow.
It's like, Justin Trudeau didn't think I had cable on my airplane. But, like, I can launch a nuclear war for that airplane. Justin knew that. But he didn't know I had cable. Really?
You know, it wouldn't matter. Whatever country the G7 was in, that's who would get beat on, right?
Probably.
Pretty much whoever's has to make the states, you're the leader of wherever it's being held.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other thing? Trump was like, well, where's Russia? Russia should be here.
Why
isn't
Russia here? Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Russia should be here. I don't understand.
I mean, that's the kind
of
stuff.
So him and Putin could hang out. Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff he says that makes people go, huh.
Yeah.
What do they have on you then? Because it came out of nowhere. He's on his way to the freaking helicopter. And he's like, it's so strange that Russia's in there. It's like, who knows why? Everybody knows why. It begins with the letter C. It ends with the letter A. And there's a Ramia in the middle.
Yeah.
Crimea.
Yeah.
It's, in case you didn't get it. It's
the Wheel of Fortune moment. It's like, what is crimson? No,
right. Yeah. But everybody knows. Everybody knows. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you don't have to talk in code. Like, it's exactly what was going on. So, yeah, it got all weird. And, of course, the famous photo making the rounds with Angela Merkel, which has been punked up several times. My favorite is the toddler in the high chair with the spaghetti on his head. And it's like, that's a great shot. And then Angela Merkel is like, no, that really isn't what was going on. It wasn't what you think, because it does. It looks, it's one of those that's got the perfect arc or whatever. Like, this is one of those perfect photos that will live on.
Yeah.
It's going to be in a textbook somewhere.
There's some kind of geometric, trick.
It looks like a snail, the perfect.
Right.
Some of you photo types could let us
it's
know.
It's funny the White House version of that. You see Justin Trudeau standing behind Trump and he's like having a great time. And it's like, maybe that wasn't what we thought it was. I mean, Trudeau looks like that in every picture too. Mm. It's like he's having the best time ever.
I'm sure Mexico's happy that, Canada's getting beat on a bit now.
Well, I mean, this was
them.
Maybe
we're getting a wall too.
Oh, good
Lord. I heard we're getting a hedge. That was on the Beaverton or something.
Yeah.
A hedge. Oh, lovely.
Yeah, Mexico for sure is pleased, because I think that was the Mexican concern, was that
we were getting off
Trump's
lightly.
Trump's Trump is this. He wants bilateral relations with everyone. He wants, like, I want to do a deal with you and then deal with you. Where it's like,
it's
really?
All about deals, right?
Well, okay. The deal thing is something that takes me off separately. But yeah, that was Mexico's concern, was that Canada would be siphoned off to do a direct deal. And now Trump is all but assured that's not going to happen. But the deal maker thing is something that really brasses me, because he just has. In order to make a deal, you have to have a grasp of the details, and he seems to have no grasp of the details. Like, he keeps talking about this huge, huge trade deficit, and it's like, you have a $1.8 billion trade surplus.
Mm-hmm.
We basically come out quits. I mean, $8.6 billion or $8.1 billion in the grand scheme of things, when you're talking about billions and billions and billions, hundreds of billions of dollar trade, isn't a lot.
Well, but it's one of those things that's along the lines of the I saved $1.1 billion comment. It just... These guys get stuck on a number, and they just keep putting it out there because it's all they can remember. And Trump doesn't, if I understand right, Trump doesn't like to read. He doesn't read the briefing. He's just like, if it's on Fox News or whatever, they just, he's pretty much doing what they tell him to do.
If it makes it through the series of tubes from a far right Reddit page to some blog to Breitbart to Lou Dobbs, then to
people are saying, right. You'll know it's not policy. It's just whatever people were saying, Lou Dobbs, whatever.
But speaking of numbers, he gets hooked on the 350 or the 270% tariff on dairy.
Yeah.
But
there's lots of people beating on supply management down there. So that is sticking in his head. It's like, this is right. It's socialist.
Well, I mean, everybody has supply management. Like,
they do
apparently
too.
U.S. has 350% tariffs on tobacco imports, 160% tariffs on peanuts. So they do it too. And on top of it all, the thing about dairy is that places like Wisconsin produce way too much dairy.
Well, that's exactly it. Somebody was talking to somebody in crop science, and they said, you could take out every cow in Canada, and the U.S. could make up that deficit, flood us with all of their stuff, and they still wouldn't be better off, because it's surplus. It's like they're overproducing.
They're paid to
100%.
Basically
just keep
dump all the
out.
Milk. Into the sewer.
And
it's
it does
crazy.
Find its way up here in powdered form, in different forms. If you alter it from its natural form. We're going to get an agriculture conversation. If you alter it from its natural farm, like powder it up, you can send a ton of that up and then it just gets used in products. It's a bit of a loophole. There's a loophole will be found and driven through, right? But yeah, Trump's got in his head. He probably had a one-on-one with somebody that he liked about supply management and how terrible it is and how lefty it is in Canada. But I think it's pretty much what led to, we should mention about Bernier getting cut from the cabinet.
Yeah.
Who has being a libertarian, has a deep-seated hatred for supply management and anything that smells of socialism. And that's how he got.
Of course, Scheer came right out and said it wasn't about supply management; it's about loyalty. And Bernier publishing a book where he talks smack about Scheer winning because he loves supply management so much.
Bit of a bigger picture, but yeah, it's a lot of Quebec votes there. So,
I mean, it's like when you're talking about Quebec conservatives, it's Bernier and who else? So, I mean, he's kind of the conservative from Quebec. So
it's like the Mulroney years, right?
It's not like. It's not going to go unnoticed that Bernier isn't at the front of the table anymore, or at the big table, or however, the front of the bench.
You're benched. Who
knows how Parliament works?
We should. All should. Listening,
we should
get out there and find out how Parliament works. We will help you.
Speaking of Donald Trump's incredible deal-making prowess.
Oh, this is the best. Was it not the best?
No, it was not the best. It was kind of scary.
I just mean in terms of, I'm sad that Saturday Night Live isn't in session because it would be glorious.
It was kind of sad, actually. So Trump met Kim Jong-un. Trump, characteristically, just agreed to it without consulting his foreign service. And it was announced back in, I think, March that this was going down June 12th. It looked like it was off. Donald Trump canceled it, and then it was back on somehow.
He's probably like, we've got these beautiful commemorative coins. We have to have it.
Oh, the coins.
I want one. I really want one.
No, thanks.
Yeah. I'll get you one. I'll get you one, too. I'm going to America, and hopefully I'll come back in one piece.
So they finally had it on June 12th. It was kind of like it was just the two of them meeting, and then there was a working lunch, so the whole thing was about 5 hours long. But, hey, progress, because Donald Trump agreed that that the United States and South Korea would cancel future military exercises together, and in exchange, the United States got...
crickets.
Nothing.
Cue the crickets.
Nothing at all.
Well, they got the pledge that they were going to denuclearize.
They got the same pledge.
Denuclearize.
Clinton got,
like,
Bush
12
got
times.
Everybody. Yeah. Yeah. They got the same pledge. Like, North Korea has, like, stacks of these photocopied pledges to denuclearize, and they just hand them to the next U.S. president. It's Donald Trump thinks he's Nobel Peace Prize material now.
It's like the high-speed rail studies in Ontario. But that's
just
a big stack of them somewhere with dust on them. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. But Trump's like, got a great deal. He's a great guy. He's, talented and... subtle.
Talking him up and 100,000 political prisoners. But yeah, we can let that slide.
Also,
we're killing his half brother.
Also, he's personally ordered the death of over 300 people, including his brother.
Yeah.
Kim Jong-un. Great guy.
Yeah.
Tough guy. Took over the...
talented. He's talented at what? Does he play accordion?
Took over the country when he was 27, so he's smart and tough, even though,
it was handed to him, like Trump's businesses, right?
Yeah, even though it's been pumped into the heads of North Koreans for 70 years that the Kim family is, unusually blessed. I mean, Kim Jong...
Two sons were in the
His father, Kim Jong-il, got, 100 holes in one during his first golf game.
That's the best.
Or something.
Because it's true, right?
It's true. U.S. having a huge trade deficit with Canada is true.
Yeah. Keep saying it. It's true.
That's right.
One of the best things to me was that the aftermath, the day later, was lots of these lists, the 10 strangest things that happened, the 8 weirdest things that happened, because it got really, really weird. Everything from Dennis Rodman completely losing. Did you see it?
Yes. Oh, I saw that. I saw that.
It was fantastic in a way, in a funny way. I don't know. On the one hand, you're sort of feeling sorry for the guy that he's that emotional, but he did have a hand in it, right?
Yeah.
He extended the hand of friendship and went and played some basketball, shot some hoops with a terrific guy. Which is weird in itself. And what is potcoin.com? I don't, what is, see, it sounds like cryptocurrency involving marijuana. I don't know. But yes. That's, so a lot of it is the shill as well, right? So
once I understand how loves. Bitcoin works, I will tackle potcoin. But who the heck knows? This is Dennis Rodman, though. It's like Dennis Rodman was a basketball... For people who may not remember, it's going back to the mid-90s, Dennis Rodman was a basketball player on the Chicago Bulls at around the same time Michael Jordan was in the twilight of his career as one of the Chicago Bulls. So they were both kind of teammates at the time. For you kids who may not remember the 90s with perfect clarity, this was around Space Jam. This is, so, you know, this is Dennis Rodman. You know, it looked like he might have had, like, life after basketball. He really hadn't. Then he decided he's going to be a special envoy to North Korea on his own volition. And he goes on CNN and starts crying about the greatness of Donald Trump finally meeting this great guy, Kim Jong-un, who he's dealt with a lot. It's just, it's so bizarre. Like,
it's bizarre.
They're all cartoon characters. Donald Trump is a cartoon character. Kim Jong-un is a cartoon character. Dennis Rodman is a cartoon character. We have cartoon... like it's like watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit on CNN all the time. Because, you know, I'm expecting Judge Doom to come out and start...
Well, and along those lines, too, the movie trailer. Did you watch that?
Oh, my goodness.
It's the Destiny Pictures Presents.
Yeah.
It's like produced it plays right into what you've just said. It's like you're building this kind of mythology that I showed him the video and I think he really liked it. And it was pretty much saying, you know, it's capitalism or die. And what was the other comment too about the beach? You've got beautiful beaches. I can see condominiums all over the beaches.
Yeah, assuming they don't put windmills offshore.
Yeah.
That was an inside Trump organization.
Scotland. Yeah, but they should. They should do that. I mean, who knows what they do, but what I'd also heard after it was a very quiet comment on some commentary that he's also planning, Kim Jong-un is planning, Tim Jong-un, it seems people are calling him, is going to meet with Putin and he's going to meet with Al-Assad as well. So he's doing the rounds. So
yeah,
to me, this says to me that North Korea has pretty much hit the expiry date. It had years ago. China probably isn't propping it up as much. China's probably a little bit nervous about what's going on, too.
China's girding them because they don't want the freaking flood of refugees, and that's all.
Yeah. But at the same time, so he's, you know, with Kim Jong-un doing the rounds, whatever he did with Trump or came up with, which, as you say, wasn't much.
It was nothing.
Is going to, it's, yeah. The
and
great
then he
handshake.
Goes back on state TV and says, oh, Donald Trump's going to lift sanctions for us. We're going to see the troop withdrawal from South Korea. It's like, we won.
Yeah.
And then Donald Trump says, oh, we're going to cancel, but there's nothing else. And I was actually watching this, like, if you were up late enough on Monday night, I guess, they were covering it live on the American channels. Mm-hmm. And there's one point where him and Kim are walking from one meeting to another and the press are shouting questions. And Donald Trump's like, oh, yeah, we're going to be signing something very, very soon. And the press is like, signing what? Like, they're yelling at him, like, what are you signing? And Trump's like, we'll see you soon. It's like... what are you signing? Have you just given away like
Alaska?
Signing
the room service check, right?
It's,
yeah.
It's bring so us, bizarre.
Bringing some shrimps. Yeah, and it's the whole thing was bizarre. Like, and yet, when you think about it, who else could have pulled it off? Like, nothing has happened in all these years.
Right. You know
it's
what?
It's just right place, right time. Trump happens to be the right guy.
The thing,
really?
Well, Obama
in a weird
also
way.
Obama also said like when Obama was campaigning, like he would sit down with leaders
Fox
of North Korea,
News beat on them, and
with
beat
no
on
conditions.
How can you sit down with this guy? He's a terrorist, blah blah blah.
And he,
scene two, now it's like, isn't it wonderful that Trump? You know, cue
and
the violins.
To an extent, like Trump's flattery of Kim Jong-un is not outside the norm. Like Obama did it when it came to Iran, not to this extent, but he didn't like. Get out the hatches. He didn't talk about, you know, Cuba, like the Castro brothers' horrible human rights record when he was normalizing relations with Cuba. But it's not outside the norm. The question is, like, how much of this is just Donald Trump you know, wanting to look like a cool deal maker, and how much is it his obsession to get the Nobel Peace Prize, which Obama won, and that craziness, and how much is it to show Obama up, since Barack Obama told him that North Korea was going to be his most dangerous foreign policy issue. I mean, so this, there's all that going on. So who knows? I mean, and also along with the fact Donald Trump openly admitted he didn't prepare. He didn't feel like he had to prepare. He was going to feel it out. He was going to go by instinct, which sucks.
Although it was in the first minute.
Right, which sucks. His instincts as a businessman suck. He used to have 3 casinos in Atlantic City. Now he has none. He sucks as a businessman. So
a pattern which repeats. Yes.
So, how are you supposed to, like, I could see Donald Trump going in there to shake up the system, fine. But he doesn't do the homework. And that's what I hate. He doesn't do the homework. And then he wants credit for doing the absolute minimum. And he has a bunch of people who go on TV and say, why don't you give him credit for basically towing the line and getting this exact same agreement that every other U.S. president got and any other U.S. president could have gotten? There was no deal at all.
But they got the handshake. They got the...
Which only helps Kim.
Yeah.
It only... Because, like you said... North Korea is at the limit. You know, we've seen like the bootleg footage, like driving around Pyongyang with empty streets everywhere.
People eating grass. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, what else can they do? It's a huge political victory for Kim Jong-un.
Mm.
And absolutely no victory at all for the United States.
It'll be spun any which way on their state television. I don't know if you've ever seen North Korean state television. Beyond the yelling newscast, but it's just
those are great.
It's all just stuff to do with the family and are they hitting their production targets and weird music, like weird culty music.
Yeah, I mean, there's no understanding about the issues. And Trump thinks like victory is just as simple as showing up. And that's not it.
I got the greatest deal ever.
We have no idea where it's going to go from here. They released a statement. But what's the next phase of this? He invited Kim to the White House. Love to see that happen. I doubt it will, because Kim doesn't like to go far from home, because if dear leader is out of the sphere of influence, who knows what the people might do.
And he might get plugged.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
But I guess a possibility of Singapore as well. But he's got pretty serious Secret Service.
Well, they were running along.
They run along. It's very... They're still in horse and carriage times, I think.
Some places in yeah. No doubt. I do want to point this, because Trump's been busy with foreign affairs. The White House had a job fair at the Dirksen Senate building from 2 to 5 p.m. today.
How did we miss that?
I saw it online before the show today.
What kind of jobs did they say?
Just like regular run-of-the-mill like White House jobs, like pages and like assistants. And
they need media people? Yeah. We should have gone. We definitely should have gone. I got a jab.
There's plenty of work to do up here.
That is true.
But that's part of the bizarreness of the Trump White House, is there was a freaking job fair to get people to work in the White House. Usually it's not a problem to find people to work in the White House. Usually there's a lineup of people who are exceptionally qualified, if not overqualified, to work in the White House. But the Trump White House has to have a job fair.
I wonder if it's for diplomats too, because there's a lot of them on saying, I couldn't do this anymore. I had to leave because of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Glad we got that off our chest.
Yeah,
Stay connected to Open Sources at our website all week long, opensourcesguelph.com. You can connect with us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, or go to @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And you can listen to past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and or Google Play. And you can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we'll see you then.